Hello, America, and all of our listeners all around the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Logi and special and hopefully more regular guest in the future, Patrick Mifflin.
I remembered.
Yes, he actually remembered this time.
What happened is our podcast group chat kind of moved from Facebook to Discord.
Yeah.
And so hey, who's going to be on this week? Chat stopped going out. And apparently without those, I am helpless. So
I
had to just make a mental note to remember because I was never sure week to week whether we were recording on Friday or Saturday. I was just watching for the chat to come in, and when it stopped, I didn't know what to do. So, it looks like we've got a regular recording day now, and I can start planning around that.
Yep. All right. So, so this week's episode is going to be for October 14th, 2023. It certainly feels like it outside. On this week's episode, obviously the still major ongoing story is the Israeli Gaza war that has been going on for the last, week, 2 weeks now. And we're still getting some fairly traumatizing nightmare fuel from that ongoing conflict. Also just a whole mess of misinformation flying around. But on top of that, we've also got the ongoing sort of flustercuck that is the trying to find a new Speaker of the House. They've gone through three different candidates now.
What a shit show.
We'll tell you who the most recent was and how many votes it took for him to finally get knocked off the list. We've also got some new news from the ongoing legal troubles of former President Donald J. Trump, including one of his most public allies flipping on him. We'll tell you about that. We also have some new news about that guy, that army guy that fled across the 38th parallel and went into North Korea. We found out why he might have wanted to flee in the first place. And turns out it's nothing very noble. we'll tell you what it is.
It's a pretty narrow list of reasons why you'd do that. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah. And this is certainly the one of all time.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we've got news that, guess what? The Carolina Reaper has officially been knocked off the top of its, the top of the bracket for hottest chili pepper in the world, because we got a new one. And guess what? It was created by the exact same guy. We also got, some ongoing stuff about Twitter. I know it's not technically called Twitter anymore, but screw it. It's still Twitter. And, of course, we got a bunch of entertainment and media-related stuff as well, including a couple of trailers and a certain Apple TV show that is now not going to be returning for a new season. But before we get to all of that, before we get into all that stuff, we're going to start off, as is tradition, by talking about all the things we've been doing leading up to this week. And, as usual, we will start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Mostly enjoying the, I don't know if I'd call it weather. It's been nice and chilly around here, which is nice.
Yeah.
But coming with that is a lot of rain. Which has been needed because we've been in kind of a drought here for September.
Mm-hmm. That sounds heavenly.
Yeah, where we had a third of an inch for an entire month. But we've had rain here a good bit for the past week or so. So that's been pretty nice. For things I've been doing, not really watching too much. I did watch some more Columbo involving the second episode with Robert Vaughn, where he is not the killer. I thought that was, I think it was one where they kind of obscured it a bit. So kind of keep you in the lurch of what's going on, especially because at the end, he has a big thing explaining, what they figured out and all that with like five people that could potpotentially have been it. The weird thing is like I thought Robert Vaughn was the killer and then he just disappears at a certain point. Like, oh yeah, he was killed too. I was like, what? Since when? I might have missed the specific scene for that, but I was like, all right, whatever. Yeah. But then the next episode got even better because it involved William Shatner showing up.
Because, of course, he was. It was inevitable.
Yeah.
I mean, at that time, in that era in television, it was like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Like Shatner was almost, it was inevitable that he would show up at some point.
Yeah, and he plays. This is where they get very up their own ass. He plays a popular TV movie detective character named Detective Lucerne, who gets kills his producer lady and is sort of trying to lead Columbo away from him, but also, you know, dealing with him kind of fanboying out for him, but eventually kind of leads him back to him as a possible suspect kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of those cases where one of the few cases where the person, the main suspect, doesn't like tell him to go away and never come back kind of thing. Like at the end, he like reveals like how he figured it out. And he's like, oh, you didn't do this one thing. And he's like, oh, fuck, basically. So that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
For Columbo stuff. Not much else I've watched, but, for things I've been playing, some more Honkai Star Rail. That's been fun. I'm hanging out in the second city. That you kind of get access to, not really doing too much, just watching story basically is where I'm at. A lot of exposition being shown to me and some notes of characters being deceitful about their intentions and that kind of stuff. So that's been fun. Basically figured out in this city that you should go click on all the trash cans and mailboxes because they might have stuff in them. It's like, all right, I found every single one I could find. One of which got me a trophy because it's unlocks some music. Because they have a bunch of music you can play on the train. I don't know anywhere else, but you can even buy it from certain vendors, that kind of stuff. For not too much money. I have like 200,000 bucks in there, and it's like 10,000. Where it's like, it's not bad, but that's still pretty neat. For other things, I've been playing some Rocket League as there is a new event going on for Halloween that is Nightmare Before Christmas themed. So that's pretty nice. Just requires you to do a bunch of stuff, nothing really too complicated. So working towards that. They do have, I think, some specific skin stuff and whatever else you can buy. Though I think the main thing I'd want to get is the anthem, so you can have a little bit of a Nightmare Before Christmas theme stuff to play when you score goals, that kind of stuff. So, but I'm kind of sticking with the ones that I have, which is Never Gonna Give You Up and Smash Mouth All-Star, which are kind of the kings of music for that game. So, but let's see, the last thing, Euro Truck Simulator 2, they just put out some new DLC that adds the West Balkans to it, which is a group of countries that I know about, but not that much, like specifically which ones it encompasses and all that. But it adds a bunch of these countries, Albania, Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Yeah.
Let's see. Croatia, Kosovo, Montenegro, North Macedonia, Serbia, and Slovenia.
Mm-hmm. All of the about half of those used to all just be Yugoslavia.
Yeah. And I can tell like there's heavy like Soviet influence in these areas.
Well, yeah. Well, Yugoslavia was independent from the Soviet Union, very famously, because Marshal Tito and Stalin did not get along, but Albania, on the other hand, basically burned every single bridge it had. Have you driven through Albania yet?
No, I have not. If you been do, on.
If you do drive through Albania, be on the lookout and see if you see any like concrete dome bunkers, because they're like freaking everywhere in that country.
It's like
a grid. Yeah. So see if you can find any. You should, because like I said, they're literally everywhere.
Yeah. I've not played Euro Truck Simulator 2 as much as American Truck Simulator.
Hmm.
So I have mostly, if you look at the in the maps, they show you like what roads you've been on. Mine's mostly around the UK, France, a little bit in Spain, Germany, and a couple other places like the bigger countries. Not so much on the eastern side of Europe. So when I started up, it's like, oh, you can warp to any of these places. And so I started in Poland and drove south, basically took jobs to get down into there and got into Serbia for some of their stuff there. And yeah, definitely ran into some signs where I'm like, I don't know anything what's on this sign. This is a different language than anything I know of.
You warped.
Yeah.
Quoty Finger Simulator.
Yeah.
Which I went to a couple of cities like Novi Sad and what you might call Belgrade, but it's Belgrade.
Belgrade, yeah.
Yeah, I looked up Wiki pages on a couple of these, be like, how the fuck do I pronounce this? And then I figured that out, and it's like, all right, that's neat. So yeah, that's some neat places. I'm looking forward to driving through some more of it.
So I'm guessing just a shit ton of brutalist architecture, like everywhere.
Sounds about right.
Somewhat. The areas I was in were more lots of bridges and such to get around.
Gotcha.
You can see like, oh, here's where they got two bridges next to each other because one's for the train, one's for the cars kind of stuff. And you know, a lot of manufacturing places, stuff like that. So, yeah, not too bad for that. So, yeah, looking forward to more of that. And then that's pretty much it for me. So, are we going to Pat next?
Okay. So, I completely rebranded my YouTube channel in the last couple months. It's called Little Akiba Games now, and it's taken a hard turn toward import gaming coverage in addition to all of the stuff that I was previously covering on the channel. It basically started from a result of a couple things. Like, obviously, I was already going to take the turn toward import gaming coverage, but I didn't really know how I was going to do it. I got talking with another local about the state of independent gaming stores here in Cache Valley and what I would do the same way, what I would do differently, in terms of operating something in that scope. And what, you know, we went over like what exactly I would carry, how I would handle trade-ins, what other facets of, you know, gaming adjacent media would I deal in. And one thing about it that kind of stuck out was when we talked about the name of it, and I was immediately, Little Akiba Games just came to me. I totally BS'd it. Honestly, it was because I wanted to set up a space if I had any entrepreneurial knowledge whatsoever, which I don't. Obviously, gaming media is my field, not gaming retail. But I would want to set up a space that people could come into and just be immersed in gaming culture, like import gaming culture, retro gaming culture, some anime culture, arcade gaming, just soak it in really and have it be kind of a little slice of Akihabara in the American Intermountain West. And so the name Little Akiba Games just stuck, and I didn't really apply it to the channel at that point, but the name just, it kind of stayed in the back of my mind. So later on, I got working on the channel rebrand and what I was going to do with it. And at first, I was actually thinking about splitting up into the SP Patrick channel and the Little Akiba Games channel. But I kind of wanted to give the rebrand the momentum of the audience that I'd already built. And so I decided to go for a rebrand instead of a second channel. And I started thinking, well, okay, I want to build a community where people can show up, immerse themselves in gaming culture, import gaming culture, retro gaming culture, all the same stuff that was coming up when I was thinking about this idealized store. And just maybe possibly discover your next favorite game that you would have never heard about before you came to the channel. And automatically, Little Akiba Games came back to me. And it was just one of those moments where everything clicks into place, and from there it just went like a million miles a second. I was figuring out everything that I needed to do in order to set up the rebrand. I got in touch with my girlfriend's sister, who is an amazing artist, about coming up with some artwork for it, because I wanted to position myself as like the natural successor to Banzai Chibi-chan from PSM Magazine back in the 90s, because that's the kind of presence that I feel is really lacking in the gaming media space today. I planned out what videos I needed to launch with, or at least follow up the launch with, and how I wanted to plan out my content on a regular basis from there, which I haven't really executed as well as I would have liked. But it's coming. And then the videos just, like, they practically produce themselves. Mm-hmm. I hit the ground running on this, and I think there was a 1 week span where I produced 8 videos and blew out my voice. So, yeah, there was a lot of editing, a lot of tea to soothe my throat, and yeah, the channel rebrand has gone over really well. I think I've picked up, I think my subscribership has gone up about 20% since I relaunched the channel. And at this point, I'm covering the real retro hardware side of things. I just released a video last week about getting my hands on a PC Engine, which, like, it's sitting right next to me, the Japanese TurboGrafx. And I picked up some games for that. I've got another video coming up about the Super Famicom, because I just got one of those. And I'll be talking about the games that I picked up for that, which are mostly going to be off the beaten path, stuff you might never have heard of, with the exception of Dragon Ball Z Super Butoden 2, which I covered in a previous video about, like, what that game means to my introduction to and immersion into the world of import gaming. So once I got the Super Famicom, I absolutely had to get my hands on that game. And I got it for like $1 on eBay. So that's one of the big things I want to drive home about import gaming, is like, there are some games that are going to cost you a lot, but by and large, it hasn't been ruined by collectors the way the domestic gaming market has. So it's been a really good opportunity. Like, I'm trying to be as space efficient as possible, but I have reintroduced a CRT TV to my gaming environment to be able to play these older systems. And it's really given me the chance to live out the import gaming dreams of my childhood in the name of content creation. It's been fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like I've been living my best life. I've hit the living my best life part of my content creation, gaming media journey. And at this point, I'm just enjoying every minute of it.
Mm. All right.
But I know you've looked at some of the videos that I've put up. What do you think?
You're definitely doing well. I do think it's kind of neat you're doing like the modern PNG YouTuber type thing. now that like most of the PNG YouTubers I've mostly moved on either into Facecam or they just became VTubers.
I said this in one video. I do so much editing of my audio because of my stutter that honestly, if I took a VTuber approach or a face cam approach and then applied the edits to it, what would come out the other end is some kind of choppy max headroom nightmare that I have absolutely no interest in subjecting people to. So I think putting my edited audio over still images of basically a very Banzai Chibi-chan looking character is the optimal way for me to go. Do all roads probably lead to VTubing? Yeah, I'm kind of resigned to that, but for the time being, I think this is really good branding for the channel, and we'll see where it goes from there. Has it piqued your own interest in import gaming?
It might. I've only just gotten into it, so I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
All good. Because all three current systems are completely region free. That's one of the things I really try to drive home in my channel. So, as far as games for the Switch, the Xbox Series X, the PS5, you can just go to Amazon or PlayAsia or Video Games Plus and buy games knowing for a fact that they're going to work in your system. You're not going to run into any kind of region locking whatsoever. And I think that's wonderful. It's going to open up so many doors to people to play games they would have never had the chance to encounter before.
Awesome. Okay, so I guess we're going to end with me. Well, as for me, I had been playing like Cyberpunk 2077 because, you know, they had the update and the new expansion. And I finished all that, so that game's going sort of back on the back burner again. And I decided, you know, I'd been so immersed in these like hyper-realistic sci-fi games that it was probably a good idea to try and go sort of in the other direction. And so I got on PSN, and because it was, you know, it's relatively cheap right now, I went and bought a copy of Amori. Now, for those who don't know who Amori is a one of those indie RPG games that sort of came out in the kind of in the aftermath of Undertale, like coming out and becoming just a massive smash hit. And now, you know, you've got all these sort of Earthbound inspired postmodern RPG games suddenly showing up.
Have you seen Stray Children yet?
I have seen like bits and pieces of it. And I'm like, yeah, that's definitely something I want to give a shot.
Yeah, it was part of the September Japanese Nintendo Direct, and it's a game that I'm trying to bring to a lot of people's attention. I'm glad you found your way to it already, because that's going to be one to look forward to.
Yeah,
it looks like Earthbound, Undertale, and Saga Frontier had a baby.
Yep. But yeah, so like all after, you know, that happened, and kind of inadvertently also kind of brought some light back on the Earthbound games again. Like I can't emphasize this enough. Earthbound, when it originally, and obviously when I say Earthbound, you know, for like the quote unquote sophisticated gamers, that's Mother 2. That game, when it first came over here, it bombed, and it bombed hard for a couple of different reasons. The big one was simply the fact that it was more expensive than a lot of the other SNES cartridges were at the time. It came in like this big sort of fuck off box compared to it, because it also came with like this I don't think it was actually a Nintendo Power issue, but it was like in the format of a Nintendo Power. It was kind of like a strategy guide slash manual.
It was in the series of strategy guides that were published and produced by Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
So it was adjacent.
Yeah. That, you know, and it, if you remember, you know, it had like this beautiful, like sort of clay sculpting aesthetic to it. That wasn't like the actual game at all, but that's neither here nor there. And it was also, you remember, it also kind of had a rather cruddy like ad campaign with those like scratch and sniff ads in the magazines.
Oh God.
Yeah. Let's just say it wasn't.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it wasn't smart. So the game kind of bombed. And then, you know, the Smash Brothers games came out, and they ended up putting, you know, Earthbound characters into it as like secret characters. And it kind of inadvertently brought knowledge back into that particular game and made it more of a cult classic, I guess. You know, and then, you know, Undertale came out, which was heavily inspired by it, and that inspired more people. And eventually got to the point that, you know, Nintendo was fine with releasing what they called Earthbound Beginnings, which is the original Mother game for the, you know, Nintendo Switch.
Famicom, yeah.
The online. Because apparently, I do remember they had actually, it wasn't really that big of a thing they had to do, because, like, the whole thing had already been prepared. Like, they'd already gone through, like, you know, the domesticating it and all that stuff, like, decades beforehand. So all they had to do was just go back in the archives and go, oh, look what we have.
They Star Fox 2'd it.
Yeah, basically. But, yeah, so after Undertale came out, and that game, of course, is an amazing game and is a modern classic for a reason. A bunch of other games, I don't want to say imitators, because that would be... that would not be fair to a lot of these games. They don't really copy the Undertale formula, because the Undertale formula is pretty specific. But they do have that kind of approach of, like, yeah, everything's kind of cute and wacky on top, but it's actually, like, super fucking dark underneath it.
Descendants.
Yeah. Amori is essentially a game about it's basically set in two different places. You play a guy, his name is Sonny, but he's also called Amori, O-M-O-R-I. And you start the game off in what's called black and white space. You're like in this tiny little room. There's like a little cat, and there's a light bulb and a journal / sketchbook and a window and a door. And you can't actually leave. You can try and leave that area, and occasionally you have to get the game to go further, because you have to pick up, like, a specific object or something before, like, the door will open and you can leave it. But if you don't, you've got these weird little red wiggly hand things that'll, like, grab you and, you know, drag you back. And basically, the game takes place in two places. One of them is called Headspace, which is a very sort of nostalgic-esque, that's very Earthbound-esque in its approach. It's very, it's where the Undertale influence is more obvious. And it's, you know, it's got, like, very sort of, it's like a combination of, like, a child's imagination combined with, like, vague memories of the past mixed up with, you know, just whimsy and everything. And so you're playing Amori, and you get with these three other kids, Aubrey. I mean, no, not Aubrey. I think it's, is it Aubrey? Yeah, it's Aubrey, Kel, and Hero. And there's also, like, Amori's older sister, Mary, who's also there. And she doesn't actually, like, end up with a party. She's just usually there with, like, a picnic blanket with, like, a picnic basket and food. She's like your save and restoration area, basically. And you're, like, going on these adventures that are, like, vaguely based on, like, childhood imagination and fears. There's, like, a place that's, like, sort of like outer space. There's another one that's, like, creepy and covered in, like, a creepy forest with lots of spiders everywhere that leads to, like, this huge pink castle that's owned by this Ojo-sama chick named Sweetheart. Who even does the Ojo laugh, like, a bunch of times.
Naturally.
Yeah. But there's this other kid named Basil who kind of hangs around with you as well, even though he's not really a fighter. He's kind of pale. He wears, like, a flower crown on his head. He's, like, really into plants and stuff like that. But even at the very beginning, there's this really obvious sort of ominous thing to it underneath. It's like, something happened here. Something awful happened to somebody in this group of people. Because occasionally you'll end up, like, first of all, there's the fact that Amori carries around a kitchen knife as a weapon. Right? Like, all the others, they've got, like, you know, like, bean bags or, like, a spatula or a basketball. And then there's this one, and then there's you literally carrying around, like, a straight up,
getting ready to shank somebody.
Yeah. And then after you finish the first mission and like go back into white and black space, the only way that you can further the game is you have to literally stab yourself. Which makes it like, okay. And then you wake up and so you're in faraway town, the other hair, and this is like the real world. And it starts to make sense, like, what's actually going on here. Sunny is apparently, it seems to imply that he might be on the spectrum somewhere. He might also be, like, agoraphobic, because he apparently has not been outside of his house in, like, 4 years. He has, like, this deep fear of, like, spiders, heights, especially going down the stairs of his own house.
Oof.
Yeah. And it's very clear something happened that has really messed this dude up. And this is sort of his way of coping with it. But I haven't gotten that far in the game. The actual like battle system is very Earthbound-esque in nature. But it's also like uses like... it uses emotion as sort of like it's... as sort of like this thing where it's like, if you or any in your party or your enemy are feeling a certain emotion, you'll have these certain effects. Like if they're angry, then they'll have a bigger chance of like landing a critical hit on the enemy, but it also makes them more open for attacks in turn and getting more damage. Whereas if they're sad, they might not take as much damage, but they'll also, with every attack, they'll lose what they call juice, which is basically mana or magic points or whatever. But yeah, it's legitimately a really cool game. I do recommend it. Just be aware that there is backtracking involved because it is kind of an old school S type of RPG type of adventure. But yeah, so, that's what I've been playing mostly. I've also tried to play I Am Bread and I was like, nope, not today, Satan, because that game is designed to piss you off and I don't need that in my life right now. Yeah, I also, the usual books, still reading like crazy, because I always do. Music, I talked about last week how I've really been getting into Blue Oyster Cult lately. Because, you know, it was just like that, I was like, you know, I'd always loved Blue Oyster Cult, but I'd never, like, taken, like, listen to like their entire catalog before, and finding like how significantly like there's definitely like a, because you know they released like a new album like 2 or 3 years ago called The Symbol Remains, and it's almost like nothing changed, because yeah, the audio is better, but like the same musical approach is still there. They've still got the kind of proto heavy metal sound. They've still got all the obscure lyrics and all that stuff. And it's like, yeah, damn, these guys are awesome. They still are. Yep. Great stuff. Last but not least, there was a new animated pilot that showed up on YouTube this week that, you know, because there's been this explosion of, like, indie animation suddenly, like, hitting it big on YouTube. You know, the big sort of success story there is Has-Been Hotel. You know, the pilot came out, was a massive success, and then it got picked up by A24, then it went dark for a little while because of the writer's strike, and now we know it's going to come out in January. They have, like, a whole trailer and everything. There's this new one, it was put out by Glitch Studios, who are the people by this other series I love called Murder Drones, and it was called The Amazing Digital Circus. And basically a friend of mine told me about this, and the way he sold it to me was like, imagine Harlan Ellison's I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, but it's with the sort of aesthetics of an I Spy book. And I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And I watched it, and holy crap, if it's not amazing, genuinely amazing. It's like, okay, so basically the sort of a whole, like, idea is that there's these people who are trapped inside this virtual world that, when I first watched it, and I thought, oh, this is going to be like sort of Art Online or something like that, and not really. Basically, there's these individuals who are trapped in what you know, visually looks a lot like a mid to late 90s, like edutainment PC game, like Kid Picks or Lego Island, you know, something like that. And they've basically been stuck there for years. And it opens up very much like one of those games. There's like a theme song. There's like a main like character who's sort of like the person who's sort of guiding you through it. And then all of a sudden, this new character, Pomni, who's like this little jester character, suddenly shows up. And she's like terrified. And it's like, how do I take this headset off? And one of them tells you, it's like, yeah, just keep pulling at it. That's what worked for all of us. And obviously it doesn't. And then she finds out that all these other people have apparently been stuck there for years. And basically she spends the rest of the pilot trying to find like some kind of exit from it. And it just gets weirder and weirder from there. It's like one of those things where it's like, wow, this is going to be lore deep. I can tell. But yeah, I watched that and I highly recommend everyone watch it too, because it is legitimately not only funny, it's also like deeply, deeply unsettling as well. Right up my alley. Let me tell you. But yeah, so I have, that's all for me. So do you guys want to add anything else before? No,
not really.
All right. Well, then it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And I already, I wanted to bring this up like last week, but I had some other ideas to work with. So obviously we're all Japanophiles here and, you know, we like, you know, sushi and ramen and all that stuff. Have you guys ever had like any hot pot dishes before?
Not for a long time.
Yeah, okay. So you got, for those who don't know what a hot pot in Asian cooking, basically what it is where they take like a big old pot of steaming hot broth. Since this is, you know, in a place, like if it was in China, they'll usually have like a bisected pot where there's like a clear sort of savory broth. And then they'll have another one that's like dark red and very, you know, seasoned with like fiery chilies and Szechuan pepper and stuff.
Yes.
And then, yeah, and then they'll, like, serve it with, like, some meats and vegetables, and basically you cook it tableside, more or less. But the one I'm talking about is actually unusual in that it doesn't, you don't actually dip anything into the broth. The food is all cooked inside of it before it's served. And it's also because of the fact that it is, one, unlike most hot pot dishes, it tends to be very loaded with just all sorts of stuff in it. And two, because it's associated with the diet of one of Japan's most famous cultural icons, the sumo wrestler. Because we're going to talk very briefly about a little dish called chanko nabe, or chanko stew, as it's sometimes called. Now, any of y'all who played Street Fighter and you ever played E Honda,
I mean, I main him, so...
Yeah, and you occasionally hear his win quotes. Every so often, he'll bring up something about like, hey, man, you want me to cook you something? My chanko stew will blow you away. This is what he's referring to. So
it's sort of been his whole shtick since 2008.
Yeah, because, you know, it's very common for sumo wrestlers when they retire to, like, open restaurants to serve their own personal chanko recipe. There's a bunch of them, like, in and around, like, I think it's Ryogoku or whatever is, like, the big sumo district in Japan, where, like all the sumo stables are. But, yeah, so usually you would think, and because in our Western mindset, we're thinking, oh, sumo, they're big and heavy and fat, so it must be something that's like super fatty and, you know, calorie heavy and bad for you, right? No, the exact opposite. Chanko nabe is actually a very nutritious and balanced meal. What chanko nabe is obviously it's a nabe. That means it's a hot pot dish. Usually its base is a broth that's usually either chicken and or dashi based. Do you guys know what dashi is? Dashi, for those who don't know, it's like stock that's used in Japanese cooking, and it's mainly made using katsuobushi, which are like fish flakes, and konbu, which is like, you know, a type of edible kelp. And it's like super savory. Usually they'll also throw in like some miso or something like that. You know, miso, you know, which is like that famous paste, you know, sometimes usually made out of like soybeans or something like that. To flavor it, very tasty. And then they just basically load freaking everything into it. Usually there'll be like some sort of meat. It'll be chicken, and I'll say why in a minute, but they'll also have like fish as well. There's a very typical is that they'll use a type of like homemade chicken meatball that's usually like heavy on like the chives and the green onion. And of course they'll serve it with lots of like various like vegetables you would happen in an Asian stew. So, you know, stuff like daikon or bok choy, Chinese cabbage, stuff like that. And then they will, also there will be like as well. Usually those like long, thin ones. And, you know, they will sometimes put like pork into it well, but usually they don't. And it's largely due to like tradition. There's this belief in the sumo world that during a sumo tournament, if you're going to eat any meat, it needs to be chicken, because a chicken is a animal that stands on two legs, whereas cows and pigs, they are on four legs, or fish, which are on their stomach. And anybody who knows anything about sumo is if you're doing a sumo match, you want to be on two legs because that means you're still in the fight. But if you end up on four on your stomach, then you've just lost. So it's like a superstition kind of thing. And as for like the weight thing, the weight thing comes from the fact that they typically eat a lot of it, like 10 bowls a day, usually with a lot of rice, and they'll usually drink like a lot of beer or sake with it as well to sort of pack on the calories. But because of how like famously, you know, nutrient dish the stew is, you know, that fat is normally mostly muscle, which, you know, is a good thing at least. But, and of course, their incredibly rigorous training kind of helps as well. But of course, anybody who knows anything about what ends up happening to sumo after they end up retiring is they have to be very careful, because a lot of sumo, when they retire, they have a tendency to fall off the training like far too quickly, which makes them very susceptible to type 2 diabetes. Generally they're just their entire, you know, it's really bad for their health, basically. So unfortunately, sumo sadly don't have a very long, lifespan, but that's kind of what they just accept, because, you know, but yeah, that was, Chakranabe, the famous sumo stew. Kind of really want to be able to try some of it one of these days. Maybe when I finally get a chance to travel to Japan, maybe I will. But that was that, and that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So with that out of the way, it's now time for the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with assholes of the week. And our first major asshole of the week is this guy who was a landlord in Illinois who went into the home of a Palestinian American family and stabbed their child to death.
And his mom.
Now, the mom survived. She's in serious condition, though, and she could, you know, go at any moment. But the child did not make it. It was an excessive amount of stabs, obviously. And, it's an incredibly messed up situation. When you hear what this guy's excuse is.
He's a 71-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
Stabbed the kid, I think, 26 times, and stabbed the mom a dozen or so times.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this seemed to do it out of Islamophobia,
naturally
brought on by the Israel and Gaza stuff that's been going on. Mm-hmm. You know, best way to deal with that: go and stab these two. A lot to fear from them, especially because they've been renting from him for quite a while. So much so that, you know, the boy didn't really suspect he was going to hurt him because, you know, he's brought him gifts and that kind of stuff, kind of thought of him as a grandfather figure. Unfortunately, that did go well for him. But yeah, this is one of those awful things. He's obviously been arrested, charged with a first degree murder, attempted first degree murder, two counts of a hate crime, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon.
Yep.
He should be able to go to prison for the rest of his life, and deservedly so. Luckily, the mom survived. No idea how well she's going to do, but the father also very much not happy that this happened. So, yeah, that's an awful thing all around.
Yeah.
Shades of bringing back the post 9/11 hysteria around.
Oh yeah,
Muslims around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody of a darker skin tone.
Yep. So yeah. That's just absolutely awful and horrifying and sickening. And it's about to get worse. Because we got to turn our attention back over to Gaza because the Al Ahli Arab Hospital in North Gaza was rocked by an explosion, killing hundreds. As people try to figure out just what the hell caused the explosion in the first place. And this was all back with, you know, President Biden, you know, of course, giving his support to Israel because, you know, we're still technically allies and everything. Not a position I envy him for right now.
Yeah. And he's tried to both sides it by, you know, empathizing with the Palestinian people. And it's like, you know, it'd be the best way to try to broker some sort of ceasefire here.
Yeah.
But that doesn't seem to be in any of the major powers' interests right now. So much so, even they brought in aid for the people in Gaza and no real interest in, like, you know, vehicles to help get people out of there that want to get out. As they're taking to, you know, huddling up in hotels and hospitals and such. But this one seemed to be the one that everybody was freaking out about, especially Israel being like, this wasn't us. This, we can provide, you know, supposed proof about this and all that. And it's like, from what I could tell, they've destroyed many other hospitals. So this would not be like out of line for them. But also it's like, even if you didn't do this one, all the others are still bad.
Yeah.
Again, those are war crimes to attack hospitals.
Yeah, I think I heard something like after that, there are like 5 hospitals left in Gaza and they were probably shutting down.
Yeah. And I do need to reiterate to everybody, because apparently this is just something that everybody, people shows just how ignorant a lot of people are of the situation. Hamas does not represent the entirety of the Palestinian population in Israel.
No.
In fact, they don't even represent the entire land area of Palestine in Israel. Hamas only controls the Gaza Strip, which is a fairly small part of the overall Palestinian landmass in Israel. The other one, the West Bank, is controlled by Fatah, and Fatah is a very secular political party that does not support Islamism and, you know, Islamism as a political project in any way like Hamas does. And in fact, they and Hamas typically do not get along very well. The only reason that they're still technically together is because they're both under the sort of PLO unity government. So, yeah, just, if you're going to say anything about the Palestinians and their situation, just do a little freaking research.
Yeah.
I'm begging you. Like, this isn't even, like, that complicated stuff to talk about. It's on freaking Wikipedia, for God's sakes. But yeah, so that happened. Fortunately, it's not all bad, because heroes of the week, both of them judges, ironically. The first is a judge in New York. The one that is doing Trump's fraud trial has officially fined him $5,000 for violating a gag order and warned him twice about possible imprisonment.
Yeah. Basically telling him to shut up or you're going to be going to jail.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a thing he should take seriously or maybe not. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
At what point do you just nail him for contempt?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, on the second day of the trial on October 3rd, Engoron issued a partial gag order on all parties not to speak about any members of the court staff after Trump posted on Truth Social attacking his clerk.
Mm.
The post claimed she was a girlfriend to Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, mm-hmm. showing a picture of the two of them together, which is like, that's the dumbest thing to post.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the judge admonished the former president's attorney for a blatant violation of the gag order and suggested that violations could result in imprisonment,
mm-hmm.
Saying, I learned that the subject post was never removed from the website. And in fact, he had been on that website for the past 17 days.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it was removed late last night, but only in response to an email.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see. Also posts in case you missed it, link.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the campaign website in the back pages.
Yeah.
Referencing this stuff. So, yeah, he's just continually fucking around.
Yeah. Apparently, he also had like an outburst during when he was in court this week, I think, because he just cannot keep his mouth shut. Just all you got to do is give him enough rope. He'll hang himself with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and we got this other story. A judge has ruled that Alex cannot use bankruptcy as an excuse to avoid paying the enormous amount of money he owes the Sandy Hook families.
Yeah.
He does not have that money.
No, he does not.
No, but he's been spending a lot of money on various other things.
Yeah.
So this was sort of in response to that stuff. The families filed a motion in May asking the court to force Jones to pay the trial damages and rule out the possibility of a forced settlement in Chapter 11 proceedings.
Mm.
If forced into a settlement through bankruptcy, Jones could have liquidated his broadcast company and likely paid the families a substantially lower amount in damages while also clearing the way for him to start a new company free of claims.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he filed it for personal bankruptcy last December, after he's ordered to pay nearly $1.5 billion in the Connecticut case brought by the family members of 8 shooting victims and a first responder.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they sued him over that and won a gigantic amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But the U.S. bankruptcy judge in Texas ruled in favor of the families who had won their trial in Connecticut, except on the more than $322.5 million they'd been awarded in common law punitive damages.
Mm-hmm.
Which under Connecticut law are meant to cover attorney's fees and legal fees.
Mm.
He ruled on a similar motion for summary judgment filed by 2 other sets of parents to shooting victims who brought lawsuits against the right-wing conspiracy theorist and his company in Texas that ruled that Jones is not shielded from paying more than $4.4 million in compensatory and exemplary damages, who won their civil jury trial against Jones and his company last summer. So. The judge said in that order, also filed on Thursday, that another trial must determine the amount of damages Jones should pay them for the intentional infliction of emotional distress claims. So he's got more money he's going to be paying out and all this, but yeah, basically that he cannot use bankruptcy as a shield against these things.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to, have whatever income or whatever is involved, like garnished to pay off this stuff versus being able to avoid it and spend, tens of thousands of dollars a month on food and housing and all this shit that he does. So it's great news for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's pretty much done.
Yeah. And it couldn't come too soon, honestly. But yeah. So that was the end of the show proper. We now move on to the proper show proper. And we start off tonight with the ongoing just absolute train wreck that is an attempt to find a new Speaker of the House. They have now gone through 3 different candidates. The most recent one was Jim Jordan, and
that was never going to gain traction.
No,
there's not enough popcorn in the world.
No, and it didn't matter how many threats that his supporters tried to make at various congresspeople, it did not happen. It's very telling the fact that when they moved to do like public votes, he could get maybe, you know, he would get a bunch of people, but then they did the secret ballot and it was just overwhelmingly against him, which goes to show just how much they apparently just despise him there. He kept losing votes to become the speaker. They went through like three different ballots and he kept losing.
Yeah. You know, having like robocalls and such, trying to get people to call them to encourage them to vote for Jim Jordan and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, where are people spending this money?
Mm-hmm.
That apparently must just not be worth anything. Because those kind of campaigns are expensive either way, but it's for the most trivial shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he lost, I think, 3 votes to this. So basically told, like, no, go away. Nobody wants you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that goes into our next story here of, them trying to find somebody else.
Yeah. So eventually they went through different votes and he just kept losing all of them, and finally he's like, screw it. So he's no longer the nominee and the House is basically off for the weekend, so the next vote's not going to happen until probably Tuesday.
Yeah, they're going to hold another meeting on Monday to figure out who the next nominee is.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about a bunch of people nobody has ever heard of.
Is there a single Republican in the House who can garner enough support to become Speaker?
If it is, it's going to be like someone super obscure.
Yeah.
Because any of the like really big like public ones that like tries to get a lot of attention for themselves are going to not going to get that type of support.
Yeah.
So basically they're exposing the fact that they all hate each other.
Pretty much, yeah.
Or they don't have anybody that they like enough to get the majority of support.
Yeah.
To get the 217 number.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it even harder on themselves because they had people that, you know, didn't vote. Some of which were in Israel for whatever reason this week. And all this shit that's going on, like saying, like, I'm going to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Performative politics,
I guess. Yeah. But yeah, they're talking about like the number 3 Republican in the House, and I don't know if that's Kevin Hearn or somebody else. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know the hierarchy, and I don't care to know.
Yeah. So in the meantime, they've been considering whether or not to keep the interim guy, McHenry, as a speaker, who probably does not want the job. If the fact that he basically damn near broke the gavel when he adjourned the meeting last time is any indication.
But they're likely not to do that at all.
Yeah.
They're trying to find somebody else to do it, and they don't know who the hell it is, but they're going to figure it out on Monday. Surely they're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
This could be one of those situations where the best person for the job is the one too smart to want it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they could find means of getting Hakeem Jeffries in. He's getting the block of the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to find enough people to vote for a Democrat.
Because people have to remember, the Speaker of the House does not in any way have to be technically a member of the majority party. Literally, it could be just about anybody.
Nobody's going to
put
somebody outside of Congress that has no actual power.
No, obviously.
Because they were floating like, oh, what about Trump? And it's like, Trump has better things to do than this, as much as he would like the attention.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of, by the way, we now move on from this story. Former President Trump's lawyer, Sidney Powell, the famous Release the Kraken lady, recently pled guilty in the Georgia election interference case, and she's basically flipped on him.
Yeah, she is. Let's see. I'm trying to see what she is essentially getting. Under the plea deal, she will serve 6 years of probation, pay a $6,000 fine, pay restitution of $2,700 mm-hmm. to the state that covers the cost of replacing election equipment.
Yeah.
Write an apology letter and testify truthfully in future hearings and trials, as well as provide any requested documents or evidence subject to any lawful privileges asserted in good faith prior to entering this plea.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, aid the DA's case here for the rest of the trials as needed.
Mm-hmm.
But she was good. She's getting off pretty light compared to what she could get.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm pretty sure that life is 100% part of a plea deal. And the thing with those types of plea deals is that when you sign them, they usually have some sort of clause in them that means that if you're giving testimony, it has to be in the format that of testimony for conviction, basically. So yeah. gonna be interesting to see where this goes.
I want to know what color Trump turned when that happened.
I mean, with all that bronzer on him, it's impossible to tell.
Valid.
Also, Kenneth Cheesebro also pled guilty, so that's 2-0.
Yeah, and he is also, I believe, gonna be aiding in any testimony that they need as well. Mm-hmm. So
same.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's going to mm-hmm. 5 years of probation, pay restitution, plea mm-hmm. community service, along with testifying at trial.
Yeah. Yeah. And now for a little story about what happens when two different parts of the legal system go to war with each other. The Supreme Court of the United States has told the Fifth Circuit to stop defying its orders on following the ATF's ghost gun regulations.
Yeah.
But for those who don't know what ghost guns are, they're basically guns that are made to be untraceable. Usually a lot of them are made like either by spare parts or they're made through like 3D printers.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not made to be durable.
No, they're made to be usable and then easily disposable.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives issued regulations back in August of 2022 that required any such disassembled gun parts to carry serial numbers and required mm-hmm. anyone buying them to pass a background check in the same manner as in-person gun buyers.
Mm.
The gun manufacturers obviously challenged the regulations in court. Federal Judge Reed O'Connor in Texas, I believe the Fifth Circuit, issued mm-hmm. a nationwide injunction barring the rule from going into effect. The Supreme Court, however, took up the case and blocked those decisions from going into effect, mm-hmm. whereupon two of the manufacturers returned to Judge O'Connor's court and won an order barring the government from enforcing its regulations. The Fifth Circuit upheld that order, too, and the government has asked the High Court to void, rather than just pause, the lower court's rulings to send a message that lower courts should not countermand the High Court's authoritative determination.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the Supreme Court has done that. It's repudiated the lower courts, mm-hmm. voiding the lower court's orders and allowing the ATF regulations to go into effect,
yep.
pending further litigation, which is the whole point of the Supreme Court, to be the final say on matters. And, you know, unless there's some other angle or avenue that they could challenge it on, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's supposed to be the case for the time being.
Yeah.
You have to shape the Supreme Court in a way that allows you to overturn things like Roe v. Wade and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the Fifth Circuit is notoriously like filled with like cronies of whoever typically is in power at any given time.
NRA.
Yeah. But yeah. So moving on from there, you may have heard the story a while back about a private that fled across the 38th parallel into North Korea, where he was then taken into custody, and then they decided to give him back because they couldn't really figure out, you know, what to do with this guy. Well, He has now been charged with desertion and, as it turns out, possession of child pornography, which suddenly makes the reason why he fled all the more, I don't want to say understandable, more like, oh, that's why.
Yeah, it seems like this is a guy who has a troubled past in the military. Yeah, he's facing 8 charges. 8 counts against him are detailed. Let's see. Yeah, desertion's one of them. It's a very serious charge, can result in imprisonment for as much as 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's also accused of kicking and punching other officers last year, unlawfully possessing alcohol, making a false statement, and possession of a video of a child engaged in sexual activity.
Mm-hmm.
The allegation dates to July 10th, the same day he was released from a South Korean prison, where he had served nearly 2 months on assault charges. So, yeah, dealing with a lot of stuff there. So, yeah, he was sent back to, or I think he was sent to China, who sent him to South Korea and then sent to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord.
And, yeah, sent to Fort Bliss, Texas, where he was going to be facing these charges in a trial. So we'll have to see if he gets any jail time, but I assume he will.
Oh, yeah. And you know his ass is going to get court-martialed, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that all happened.
Although, that being said, like, he's going to get out of prison. Mm-hmm. I don't think... I think it's actually shocking that he got out of North Korea.
Well, yeah, I mean, they couldn't figure out how to use him for any propaganda purpose, so... They're like, yep, just ship his ass to China. But, yeah, so, next up, the Olympics will be coming up in 4 years, and it's going to be in Los Angeles, and this week we found out that 5 new sports have been added to it.
Yeah, they will have, let's see, flag football and squash are 2 of them. They will also have cricket, lacrosse, and baseball/softball are the other ones being added, so... Cricket, which means India will probably win, because that is a huge sport there.
Yeah.
Lacrosse, I don't know if there's what countries. I know that's very much an American sport, but I assume that's played around a good bit. But, yeah, it might be a North American one, so we'll see how that is dealt with. Flag football will be interesting, because I assume they're going with that over, you know, regular American football, because that's a very violent sport.
Yeah.
And you'd have to play a lot of games in a very short time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it would probably easily be the most violent sport in the Olympics if they played regular football. So flag football probably makes a lot more sense there. And squash, I don't know anything about competitive squash outside of it being like an old person's sport.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But, yeah. And, of course, we know cricket, lacrosse, and baseball will be there, too. So, yeah. Yeah, India almost certainly will win the cricket one, because it's a supreme irony that, you know, it was a sport that was introduced by British colonizers, and now they absolutely dominate the British in that sport.
Oh, yeah. It's like, is rugby another one of those? Where New Zealand destroys everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It also greatly increases the number of... Let's wind this back a little, because adding cricket to the Olympics and then opting for flag football over tackle football is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Because... Cricket, I guarantee you, increases the likelihood of compound fractures on live TV greater degree than tackle football would.
Oh, yeah, because so like one of the ways that you get a person out in cricket is that you actually have to like make the ball make contact with the legs of the batsman. So,
and what kind of protection do they wear?
These little leather pads over their shins.
And how much protection does that offer?
Not a whole lot.
Exactly.
Like you ever seen the thing that an umpire wears or like a catcher? Yeah, it's like exactly. that.
Yeah.
Also keep in mind that, you know, like, you know, the catchers outside of it, they don't wear gloves. They catch it with bare hands.
Yep. So basically, if you like to watch injuries live, check out cricket at the Olympics.
Yeah.
You will not be disappointed.
I am wondering, though, are they going to do like a test match or like a something a bit quicker? Because test matches can famously go on for days. But yeah, so yeah, moving on from there. All of us who are spicy food lovers, you know, we may have occasionally made contact with, say, the ghost pepper, you know, when that was like the hot new thing years ago. And then, of course, along came stuff like the Maruga T scorpion pepper. And then, of course, came the Carolina Reaper, which basically blew all of them away, including our sphincters. But Ed Curry, the guy who's behind the Carolina Reaper, recently debuted his newest pepper, and it has taken the claim of hottest pepper in the world. It's called Pepper X, and it is 3 times spicier than its predecessor. And he's actually had this pepper like in his possession for almost a decade now. It's just that only recently was he able to breed it in such a way so that the Scoville rating could average out to something consistent. Because otherwise it went all over the place. But yeah.
Yeah. I think he was hoping to see if anybody would make something worse than that.
Yeah.
But decided that he was going to show his on Hot Ones, the YouTube show. Yeah. Founder of Pucker Butt Pepper Company.
Yep.
Nice.
This is a small, wrinkly, yellow-green pepper.
Yep.
Known as Pepper X. The picture they have here looks like it's molded, but I don't think that is the case. It's just how it looks.
No, it's just how it looks. When peppers, the hotter they get, they tend to get like a lot more bumps on them. And the reason is because those bumps are like the glands that are filled with the capsaicin.
Yeah.
The gnarlier they start looking, the hotter they are.
Yeah. So they go by here like a jalapeno is about 2,000 to 8,000 Scoville heat units.
Yeah, actually pretty low on the scale, believe it or not. Of course, keep in mind, people also have to remember 2 things. One, jalapenos are, there is variance depending on, you know, how they were grown and, you know, how old they are and whatever. So the Scoville rating we have now is based on like amount of capsaicin per a certain unit of measurement, other than the way it used to be. Jalapenos are actually on the lower end.
Yeah, Serrano pepper lands about 10,000 to 23,000.
Yep.
The Carolina Reaper was about 1.64 million Scoville heat units.
Yep.
And the Pepper X averages about 2.693 million Scoville heat units.
Yep.
And as Ed Curry says here, the scale's logarithmic. So while it doesn't sound like it's 3 times hotter in that kind of scale, it is 3 times hotter.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he described the feeling of eating a whole Pepper X. There's an intense burn that happens immediately. Then your head kind of feels like, oh no, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then your body just starts reacting. You get it in your arms, you get it in your chest.
Mm-hmm.
It has no real throat burn like the Reaper, but that comes on later when you're in pain.
Yeah.
So how long did it take him to stop shitting blood?
Believe it or not, he probably did not. Because here's the thing about Ed Curry. The dude eats Carolina Reapers like they're popcorn. He's been breeding peppers like this since the 80s, and he himself has talked about, because the thing about Ed Curry is that he is a former junkie, and the reason that he started growing peppers was because he was trying to find another organic way to get that endorphin rush that drugs used to give him. So
I'm not surprised that it was something like that.
Yeah, and he's been like breeding hotter and hotter peppers. The more you start eating them, the higher your tolerance gets.
Just like you need to get harder and harder stuff when you're on drugs.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, he was like, I remember a video I watched of him, a documentary they did of him, I think it was a few months ago, where he talks about, he's like, you know, I've eaten the Reaper a ton of times now, and it no longer, you know, does that, has that effect on me, so I had to get something hotter.
So basically, the Reaper was cocaine, and now we're on full-blown crack.
I was going to say black tar heroin, but yeah. pretty much. And the thing is, he's actually got, like, stronger peppers and breeds in his greenhouse, in his possession. It's just, you have to remember, a lot of these peppers aren't necessarily made for consumption.
I was going to say that this is what he has deemed fit for public consumption.
Yeah, a lot of these are either for, like, scientific purposes. Others are for, like, medical medications, you know, stuff that works for, like, arthritis and stuff. And not, others are just, you know, personal projects that will probably never see the light of day. But, yeah. So, yeah. Uh-huh. But, yeah. All right. So, moving on from there, we got this little bit of scientific news. Scientists have finally discovered what happened to those billions of crabs that went missing around Alaska.
They turned up in the state of Nevada?
No.
That was a terrible joke. I'm sorry.
Yeah. For the past couple of years, they have canceled the general crab fishing season in and around Alaska, because there just hasn't been as many as they would expect for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly in the billions of crabs that get harvested there over the years. And yeah, scientists have been doing some observation, trying to study this and figure out what potentially happened. And they sort of came to the conclusion that they are a cold water species, and the mass warming of the oceans, the areas that they tend to hang out in, did not kill them. But when they are warmer, they require more food to meet their caloric needs. Their metabolism raises, and likely that they could not find much food, as you know, there's a lot of crabs fighting for, you know, the limited amount of food that's available, so many of them just starved to death, likely.
Mm-hmm.
Then those crabs got eaten by other species, fish and whatnot, that hang out around there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of seems to be largely what happened.
It's kind of obvious now that you think about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, climate change strikes again. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Now for just what the hell are you thinking? Elon Musk is testing a new program to charge new Twitter users $1 to create accounts and post.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, another excuse for people to go over to Blue Sky.
Yeah. By the way, we have Blue Sky accounts, just in case anybody's curious.
So do I.
Yeah. Testing it in the Philippines and New Zealand right now as a $1 fee or whatever the equivalent is in there. Mm-hmm. Their areas to use the service. This, I think, is just for new users.
Mm-hmm.
An annual fee that will apply to new users who want to post, like, reply, and quote other content on the platform, saying it will get rid of bots. But that is not a way to do that, I guess. Because as much as he's claimed that they've, you know, gotten rid of most of the bots, and I'm like, I don't think you're actually using your service, your site, because it's all over the place, and especially in the way that I find a lot of these accounts where I click on any, especially named trending topics, you'll see all these, like, Chinese accounts and such trending that, you know, it's like, oh, Carol's trending. It's like all these weird Chinese accounts that have Carol in their username, and I block one in it. Removes, like, dozens of tweets from the list there and that kind of stuff. So they're trying to find this way to charge money and kind of get rid of bots, but also that dollar could be worth it for whatever the bots are making money off of.
Mm-hmm.
So might just not do anything but make Musk a little bit more money, even though he's lost most of the value that Twitter has had.
Mm-hmm.
tell us the advertisers fucked off without telling us the advertisers fucked off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see a lot of Cheech and Chong's weed gummies all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one I won't ban because those are fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. And some news that honestly everybody saw coming. Netflix is raising prices for both its basic and premium tiers. What a shock.
In other news, the world has truly entered a great pirate era.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is, let's see, the ad-supported tier and the standard tier that is $15.49 are going to remain the same in the U.S., France, and the U.K.
Mm-hmm.
The basic tier is going up to $11.99 per month, which I don't think is available to new subscribers anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because they removed that to make the ad tier the cheapest one. But mm-hmm. premium is going up from $19.99 a month to $22.99 a month, which allows you to watch it in all 4K and all that. So, and on four devices at once, which is a lot. I'm on the middle tier mm-hmm. and enjoy just fine. But yeah. There you go. They got the most expensive of the services out there. Hulu is second for the ad-free at $17.99 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then what? Max is number three at $15.99 for their ad-free tier.
Mm-hmm.
And Amazon's $15. Disney Plus is $14. Paramount Plus with Showtime is $12. And Peacock is
$12.
Mm-hmm. So good news is you don't need most of those.
Yeah.
At least not on a monthly basis. Just pay for 1 month when there's stuff you want to watch and then watch it. And
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Just do it on a month by month basis. And now we're moving on into the media part, entertainment portion. And we're starting off with Spider-Man Across the Universe, which will debut on Netflix October 31st.
Yeah, Across the Spider-Verse. Is the sequel. Great time. It'll be out October 31st for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
This one's fantastic. Well worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
As we wait for the third one to come out sometime next year, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. But
well, they're turning that around fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've been working on both of them. The second one kind of ends on a cliffhanger of sorts.
Mm.
Where I was watching it, and I'm like, oh, are they going to be wrapping it up here? And then they're just like, no, we're just going to end on this cliffhanger because there's a second part. It's going to be like, it's not even going to be like Back to the Future Part 2 where they end it and then just like leave one thread to tell you what's going on next. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, they're still working on this one. But yeah, it's a great one of those. So,
oh, yeah.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. And we also found out the cast for Miyazaki's latest film, The Boy and the Heron.
Yeah.
It's pretty stacked.
Yeah, we got Christian Bale as the main lead.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Bautista is in there. Gemma Chan, Willem Dafoe, Karen Fukuhara, mm-hmm. Mark Hamill, Robert Pattinson, yeah. Florence Pugh. Yeah, a bunch of people in this that's a big deal. So yeah, it's not Christian Bale's first time in a Miyazaki movie. He was in the Howl's Moving Castle,
mm-hmm.
as he played Howl. So,
oh yeah,
I want to say Willem Dafoe's in one of the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
yeah,
that is good news for when this dub comes out.
Mm-hmm.
I think later this year, yeah, December 8th. So.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out and listen to all the white people in there.
Mm-hmm. And now we got this story. John Stewart's show, The Problem with John Stewart, on Apple TV Plus, but it will not be returning for a new season because apparently his newest material was apparently not lining up with what they consider to be corporate standards, so he walked.
Yeah. I guess talking about China and AI.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go, if you want to know Apple's limits, I guess.
Yep.
That's telling.
Oh, very telling.
Yeah, which then you're like, okay, hey, Netflix, you should jump into here.
Mm-hmm.
Get your own one of these shows since Hasan Minhaj's show ended a few years ago.
Yeah, and his chance of being on The Daily Show has basically been destroyed.
Yeah, I don't know what Comedy Central's got for potential people at this point.
They're still doing the guest host thing right now.
Because the other guy decided to tell them to fuck off and
mm-hmm.
do his own thing. So
yeah,
they're doing great over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Basically, all the best people they had went off elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
John Oliver went to HBO and Stephen mm-hmm. Colbert went to CBS. And
yep.
They're left being like, we still got South Park.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. South Park and The Office reruns. That's pretty much all they play now. But, yeah. And now for some trailers. We got an official Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. This is the Scott Pilgrim animated series that they're making.
Yeah.
And it looks amazing.
Yeah. Very anime. Mm-hmm. Their intro is very anime.
True to form.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, this looks really good. So, looking mm-hmm. forward to this. It'll be on Netflix November 17th, so not mm-hmm. too much longer to go. And, hey, they finally should get the success that they should have gotten with the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, finally, not last but not least, we got an official for American Fiction.
Yeah, this looks pretty neat.
Oh, yeah.
Jeffrey Wright movie. Mm-hmm. He plays, you know... a somewhat successful author, black mm-hmm. author who writes, you know, very smart books and all that kind of stuff, but they don't do super well. So he gets convinced to write dumber books, mm-hmm. you know, in the style of the popular black culture kind of mm-hmm. stuff. And his stuff starts taking off. So much he'll get, option for movies and such and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And him dealing with the absurdity of that kind of whole situation. So
mm-hmm.
That looks like that's going to be a pretty fun, like satirical mm-hmm. movie there. And that'll be out in December in theaters. So that looks neat.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, there you go.
So with that, I do believe we now have a show, folks. Yep. We've got a show. Yeah. So
good to be doing this again.
Oh, yeah, and need to do it more regularly. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at lesweekenders@gmail.com. That's lesweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for our show notes. Also, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or basically any kind of podcast aggregator that you can think of. And, so we're going to go ahead and wind it down here for tonight. Thanks once again, Chris and Patrick, for joining me on this.
Absolutely.
If you liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and anyone and everyone in between, including the random weirdos you find on the street. In fact, you should put it on like a sandwich board or something, walk around Fifth Avenue. Shout our names at the top of your lungs. You know, it might not help you out, but, you know, somebody might take a selfie with you or maybe take a video of you and put it on YouTube. And hell, that's just some amazing promotion for us. So we're going to go ahead and wind it down here. Thank you for joining. Join us next week when we hopefully have some better news to share and maybe some new projects coming your way. We don't know yet. We'll talk about it. But until then, good night, everybody.